So good morning again. It's wonderful to be here with you. I always appreciate being invited to speak at Universal Spirit Center, and it's lovely to see so many of you whom I know and love already. You have a delightful theme going on here this month that Reverend Kevin established, and that is the dance between heaven and earth. And that, first of all, means to me that we're here to welcome higher consciousness into the earth of our being. So that's part of it, is that we are always making the higher truth, the higher spiritual truth available in our life situation. But there's also a delightful dance that we do, a joyful dance between the poles of our being, so that we experience our divine reality and we experience our human reality. And that's how most people think of this dance. And yet what I have become so increasingly aware, the more I teach Emma, the more I'm aware of this, that we're really here to dance our life in a way that those two become one. And that we actually realize that we are spirit and form. And that there aren't two things happening, there's just one thing. And it's that the infinite invisible has taken on form in each one of us in our uniqueness. So that means that all of God is centered in you. And I invite you just to feel that and know that. And over time, the differences thin out. And you start realizing that you are here as the reality of spirit right here on earth. The other thing that's going on right now is that we are in a really profound, spiritually profound 40-day period that began on February 13th in what the Christian tradition calls Lent. And this 40-day period culminates in, first of all, spring comes, but also the celebration of Easter, and Passover's in there too. And whether or not the Christian tradition was, you know, your religion of origin, or you're from the Judaic tradition, or you're an earth person, the themes are mighty at this time of year. And the number 40 is symbolic of a period preparatory to a grand enactment. It's a time preparatory to a great achievement or attainment. And so what that means is that we are in a time when so much of the world agrees that this is a time for really deep spiritual work. And you can ride the energies of that. And you can use this time in the opening for your own transformative work. And we're here to rise into the light. You know, whether you think of it as the earth time of spring coming and everything's lifting into full blossoming, you know, or you engage with the Christian story about the resurrection, we're here really to rise into newness. And so the work that we do ahead of time is to prepare us for that very thing. And we, by the way, at Centers for Spiritual Living and here in this church, have a metaphysical interpretation of the world's great spiritual traditions. In other words, we look at the meaning above the literal level. There is the literal level, but we look at the spiritual meaning above the literal level, and that's always about the path of our unfoldment and our awakening to the truth of who we are. So the work of this season is really to call the light into the places of darkness, into the places of darkness of your own being, and those places are just where in you haven't known love yet, or where you have forgotten, or maybe never knew, I wasn't taught this until I came into this study, the truth of your wholeness. It's about calling the light into those false conclusions that you came to a long time ago with the child's mind. You know, conclusions like, I'm not worthy, I'm not enough, life is limited, you know, on and on. Those are what I call our favorite miserable things, you know. And it is to realize, to call the light in so sufficiently that that darkness, which is just ignorance, that's all it is, begins to be dispelled. Because none of that ever was the truth. It never was the truth. I know these things. It never was the truth. And so the work of the season is really the redirection of energy. By the way, one of our ministers, I was just at our conference in Vancouver, said that Lent stands for Let's End Negative Thinking. Which is good, isn't it? Let's end negative thinking. So the work of this season, this 40-day period, it's about a redirection of our energy and our attention, because whatever we give our attention to, whatever we give our energy to, expands in our experience. And so the work this time is to redirect our energy and our attention away from the false and put it to the true. In other words, to redirect your energy and your attention away from what isn't true about you, meaning the spiritual truth, and what isn't good for you. And you know what those things are. And as I said in first service, no elbows going out to jab the person you came with, okay? Because this is personal work. We do our own inventory, right? So you want to direct your attention and energy away from the false conclusions that you've been living out of, that you have about yourself or about life, and away from what is not good or nourishing for you, and redirect it. And this is the meaning of the true fasting. Stop feeding on the things that are not true and that are not good for you. That's the work of this time. And then we direct our energy and attention to what I love to call the good, the true, and the beautiful. Say with me, the good, the true, and the beautiful. So we want to redirect our energy and attention to the good, the true, and the beautiful, the high truth of who you are as a creation of God, created whole, complete, and perfect. That's the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth about you. That you are good in the essence of your being, that you are beautiful. And allow yourself to give up the people, places, and things that are false and not good for you, and allow yourself to welcome the people, places, and things that speak of the good, the true, and the beautiful for you. Some of you are thinking about the phone book you have to go through now and delete. Well, we don't have phone books anymore. We have them in our phones. But it's to come to the high truth of your being, to the wholeness of your being, to the spiritual reality of your being, and start being nourished by that. That's true feasting. Feast on the good, the true, and the beautiful. And that is what will assist you through this time. And so it is for this work that that was prologue. It is for this work that I offer you this talk today of putting God first. And what I know is that when we put God first in our thoughts, in our words, in our decisions, in our activities, in our relationships, there is a profound joy and liberation. Really, liberation is the word. We are liberated. And we begin to realize the spiritual reality of our being, and life changes. And we find ourselves happy for no reason, lots of times, happy for no reason. So this teaching of put God first has ancient roots. And Moses, when Moses climbed up Mount Sinai in the desert and received the Ten Commandments, the first commandment was, have no other God before me. And as Moses stood there and received the Ten Commandments, what was given to him was the law. The people were unruly. They were worshiping multiple golden idols. And the voice of God spoke to Moses and gave him the Ten Commandments, and the first one was, have no other God before me. Now, what's interesting is that as we shift into the New Testament, you can look at the Bible as the story, the evolutionary story of our spirituality. As we shift into the New Testament, and Jesus comes on the scene carrying the consciousness of love and of the reality of the truth of our being, the spiritual truth, the Ten Commandments become one commandment with two parts. And the first part is, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind. And I'll talk about the second part later. So the ten become the one, love the Lord God with all your heart, soul, and mind. In other words, it is a call away from love, away from law, into love. And the call is to love God. And please freely translate to whatever word works for you. To love life, to love spirit, to love the universe. More than anything else, to put that first in our awareness. And then to experience the blessings of a life in which we do that. So the first question I would ask you is, what is the God you love? And how you will know what you love is by acknowledging what gets the most of your attention and what you feel one with. Those are two definitions of love that I like. The self-givingness of God, so our love is our self-givingness. If you've often wondered what would love do in this situation, the answer is give of yourself. And the second definition is the awareness of oneness. So what you give your attention to, what gets your first thought of the morning, what fills your mind during the day, what you think about the most, what you make supreme in your consciousness and in your decision-making, that is your God. So whatever gets the bulk of you, that is your God, and that is what you love. And so the second question is that God the God you want? Is the God that you love, based on what gets the bulk of your attention and that you feel one with, is that actually the God that you want? And you know, in our culture, it is very easy these days to have false gods. And our false gods are the things that we look to, that we think that we can't do without, that we have to have, that we need to have to be okay, to look okay in the eyes of other people, you know, to be hip, slick, and cool, or whatever our contemporary languaging is for that. That's kind of old. So our false gods can be a person that we think we need to have. It can be a substance that we think we need to have. It can be a process that we think we need to engage in. It can be the need for other people's approval that we think we'll die without. You know, it can be a certain career or a certain level of money or whatever. All of those things are fine, but it is the thought of needing to have them that is the problem. If you think that there is something that you need other than God, and I mean really need, that is a false God for you. If it is not the real truth about God or life or love, it's probably something false that you've been giving your attention to. You know, the definition of ego is edging God out. And your false gods are the ways in which you edge God out. That you make something else God in your life other than the real God. Or you make something else the center of your life other than spirit. Or other than the practice of true love with a capital L. And yet we're here. You know, it's when we edge God out, when we're filled with fear instead of faith. When we're filled with judgment and resentment instead of real love. You know, on and on I could go. I think you get the idea, yeah? Edging God out. And yet the truth is, we're here to stand in this world as the absolute reality of God. And the truth is, we already are that. We're just awakening to it. So Ernest Holmes has a quotation that I really love. I'm going to paraphrase. It comes out of his 12th chapter in the book New Design for Living, which is a great book, especially for people new to the path. And he's writing about, it's actually a chapter on immortality, and he was writing this chapter to support people in getting over their fear of the future, not only the future in this lifetime, but the future out of this lifetime. And what he says is that we are traveling an endless pathway, and along that journey, the work is to keep allowing more and more of the divine nature to be expressed through us. So we are walking this path in order to be more love and more light and more peace and more joy and more balance and more abundance and all the other qualities of God. That's part of our work, as we keep welcoming the divine truth of our being into us and into our expression. And he says that as we do that, we spiral up to greater and greater awareness that God is what we are. And that is the long distance point of this study that we are all engaged in here, sitting here, that we are on a journey to the full realization that God is what we are, each in our own uniqueness. That's pretty profound, huh? And I'll tell you that as we travel this path, our false gods will inevitably let us down. We will hit bottom in one way or another. Or we will feel that our practice of edging God out with people, places, and things will one day become so painful that we know we can't do it any longer. And we will make a turn to the greater truth of our being. Our false gods will inevitably let us down. Some of you have been through the dark night of the soul experience. How many have you been through that? When all the false gods empty out. Because they can't take you to that distant place. They cannot take you to that realization. And so it's a harrowing experience, but it's a great blessing. when the things that we have looked to other than God let us down. And it's good to find someone who will stand at the edge of the pit, not get in there with you, and hold the light for you and say, walk this way. Because at the bottom of all the significant darkness that happens, the light will be there. And once you know that light, you will not lose it again. And so the process there is just let the falseness go. Just let it go. So there's a wonderful saying, big doubt, big enlightenment. And when our false gods start to empty out, we have significant doubt and we have disillusionment. There's also a corollary which says big crucifixion, big resurrection. It's kind of thematic for the season. Spirit loves to work in the really extreme circumstances. That's what I see. But all of that emptying out and all of that letting go of the falseness is so we come to stand in life as God and live in God. I live in God. I live as God. Let's say that together. I live in God. I live as God. And that's the truth that we know. So we're here to know one power, one presence. I heard it in Adam's treatment today. One power, one presence, one life, one love. That is God. That is the reality of our being. That's what we're aiming for. And so feast on that. That's what we want to do, is to feast on that. So putting God first is first about knowing your oneness with all of life. There is no separation. There is no place where you can go away. There is no away. There is no away except in your own mind. You're one with all life. At the quantum level, we know that. All there is whizzing information, you know, and light. That's it. And then it is to know the truth of your being in yourself, that you are created whole and you are created complete, which means nothing broken, nothing missing. There never has been and never will be anything broken or missing in you, except in your own mind. Whole, complete, perfect, that is the realization. You're here to know your divine identity, your oneness with life, and to put God first is to let that truth fill your mind and fill your thoughts and fill your words and inform your decisions and support the activities of your life. That's how we put God first. So I had an aha the other day, and it was that the amount of good I have in my life reflects the amount of God I have in my consciousness. So how much good I have in my life reflects how much God I have in my consciousness. If I have a lot of good, I got a lot of God. If I don't have a lot of good, I've been edging God out in some way with something that is untrue. So how much love I have in my life has to do with how much love I have in my consciousness. How much abundance I have in my life has to do with how much abundance I have in my consciousness. And on and on and on through all the qualities of spirit. It is said that there are four main areas of life. Health, relationships, career, and finances. Health, relationships, career, and finances. And that we tend to specialize in one as kind of our karmic path. Can you relate to that? It's not that we can ignore any of them, but we seem to have the bulk of our learning down one specific route. This mate gave me relief when I heard this. I thought, oh, no wonder. You know, I get it. Okay, I get it. So I was talking with one of our ministers, Dr. Maureen Hoyt, who's up in Westlake Village in L.A., and she was realizing, we were talking about these four areas, and she realized that she had an underdeveloped good in one of the areas because she had an undeveloped God in that area. Like in that area, she didn't recognize that God was the power, the presence, the substance, and the essence of everything in that area. And so I would invite you to think about that. Here I go again. To actually think about that. That wherever you have an undeveloped good, you have not been growing God in that area. And I know that life calls us to really excruciating faith walks. Can you relate to that? Where we want to practice a newness of being, we want to practice spiritual truth. And we're certainly traveling on a journey, and we're trying to go up ahead. and yet we can't see what that is. And we just have to take the next indicated step in full faith that the God that we are believing in and the faith that we are establishing will lay the ground under our feet. Do you know what I mean? These days, we can't really see very far up ahead. And you might be traveling a faith walk about your health and your wholeness. Or you might be called to have faith as you walk about your work in the world. Or about a relationship. Or about supply. And all we can ever do is put God first and be in the fullness of our realization about spirit as the power, the presence, and the life that we are living and take the next indicated step. And Emma Curtis Hopkins offers this to us, and please repeat after me. I covenant with God for my health. God alone is my health. I covenant with God for my supply. God alone is my supply. I covenant with God for my work in the world. God alone is my work in the world. I covenant with God for my love. God alone is my love. And you see, when we practice that full realization, all things are added unto us. That is the great promise when we practice that kind of thing. So here are some practical ways to put God first. Let your first thought of the morning be of God, even if it's, oh God, thank you for coffee. But it's a wonderful time to say, thank you for my life. Thank you for life. Just let your first thought of the day be about God, life, spirit, whatever is the word for you. And here's a little practice that you do. Arms up in a V. Please say, oh radiant God. And hands to your heart, O giver of life. And then just bow your head, I surrender to you. Let's do it two more times. O radiant God, O giver of life, I surrender to you. O radiant God, O giver of life, I surrender to you. And that little bit of bowing the head is to get your brain with all those thoughts below your heart, which knows the truth of oneness. That's the first thing. Then you go to your meditation chair, your prayer chair, your immovable spot, like the Buddha had under the Bo tree. And there you do some reading, you do some meditation, you do some prayer. You fill up your consciousness with the good, the beautiful, and the true before you start edging God out. You want to get it all in there and get oriented to that. The third thing is to have daily, what I call daily bread consciousness. And that means that you look all around your life every day and you see that you have exactly what you need in this day. And if you look around your life, you will see that on this day, you have everything that you need. Don't project into the future. You can't figure out what it's going to be. But right here, right now, on this day, I have everything I need. Say that with me. I have everything I need. Because if you have that consciousness today, you'll have everything you need on the next day. And then you'll have everything you need on the next day. And then you'll have everything that you need on the next day. And the fourth thing is monitor your thinking through the day. Notice where your thoughts go. What is it that you are dwelling on? We do not get to the realization of the fullness of this life of spirit that we're living when our thoughts are down in the darkness. We want to lift up our thoughts to the light. So those are some practical ways of putting God first. The second part of Jesus' commandment, the first one was love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind. And the second part is and love your neighbor as yourself. And we're finishing Love Month. This month, a little heart behind me, like that. And that saying, love your neighbor as yourself, we don't know exactly what that means. It could mean love your neighbor as you love yourself. And someone said, our neighbors are in trouble, since most of us don't love ourselves very well. And so we can go with the understanding it means love your neighbor as if he or she were yourself. And the truth is, he is and she is. Because at the bottom of all life is the one. And we have all come from the one and returned to the one and live in the one. And so part of putting God first, one of the best places to practice, and I invite you to do that from now through Easter, is to really be about the practice of love, the practice of oneness, and the practice of self-givingness. And so I'll share with you a little poem. This will be our completion, that you may have heard from me before, but I don't know a better encouragement for the practice. It's called "It Happens All the Time in Heaven" by Hafiz. It happens all the time in heaven, and someday it will begin to happen again on earth. That men and women who are married, and men and men who are lovers, and women who give each other light, often will get down on their knees. And while so tenderly holding their lover's hand, with tears in their eyes, will sincerely speak, saying, "My dear, how can I be more loving to you? How can I be more kind?" It happens all the time in heaven, and someday it will begin to happen again on earth. That men and women who are married, and men who are lovers, and women who give each other light, often will get down on their knees, and while so tenderly holding their lover's hand, with tears in their eyes, will sincerely speak, saying, "My dear, how can I be more loving to you? How can I be more kind?" So I invite you to practice that with your partner, with a friend, with your cat. But sometime your dog, any creature that you share your life with, to practice that. How may I be more loving to you? How can I be more kind? If we practice love, we are being spirit in full and joyful expression. So just close your eyes. I'm going to do a quick prayer. Take a nice deep breath. Let it go. I'm just so very grateful for this time to be here, to be with everyone, to embrace this idea of putting God first. First in our thoughts, first in our words, first in our actions, first in our decisions. Walking by faith and not by sight, taking the next indicated step, practicing putting God first all along the way. And most of all, practicing love. And so it is that I know that as we do this, so we are not only dancing between heaven and earth, not only are we bringing the high truth into the earth of our being, but we are also living our life in such a powerful way that in us, the two become one. And we live as spirit, freely, joyfully, lovingly, wholly, and completely. And so I give thanks and accept a very light-filled season of awakening, of giving our attention to the good, the true, and the beautiful, and of rising together in newness. And so knowing and accepting that this good is done, I release this word, and together we say, and so it is. Amen.